League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Here we are again. It's time for yet another On The Record special. This On The Record, do you mind putting that down?
Well, sorry about that, yeah.
You know, and you can worry about that later.
Yeah.
Because this is a special Ask Porky.
It certainly is.
It's an edition of something which is a very popular feature.
It has.
On our radio show, but it's taken on a life of its own.
It has.
Because we now get so many questions,
yes,
we've had to turn it into an entire podcast.
That's right.
So that's what we're going to start off with.
And I want to thank everybody for contributing to this.
Yes.
Yes.
And we've got loads and loads of great questions.
Okay.
We're going to kick it off.
Let's go.
With some of the ones on Facebook. This one's first up from John.
John.
He says, "Dear Porky, I'm going to Hong Kong this year. Any advice on avoiding the dreaded jet lag?"
Well, do you know, Hong Kong is one of the few places in the world I haven't been. I've been most everywhere else, but I've never got to Hong Kong. Even when I've sort of gone, you know, further than Hong Kong,
yeah,
I've always stopped in places like Qatar,
uh-huh,
Saudi Arabia,
yeah,
Singapore,
yeah,
but never Hong Kong.
Right.
So, and I don't miss it that much, really, because I'm not a child of the East. I'm more a child of the West.
Are you?
You know, I like the Americas,
yes,
I like South America, mm, Latin America, all that kind of stuff,
yeah,
you know. And I don't really ever want to go to Vietnam,
right,
or Thailand or places like that, because I just don't, uh-huh, the culture doesn't turn me off.
You do realise the question is about jet lag.
Jet lag, yeah.
It's not now, about Hong Kong.
Now, jet lag is simple. Don't sleep,
right,
because if you sleep, you'll feel jet lagged.
Well, don't sleep ever.
Well, don't sleep on the plane.
Ah.
Sleeping on planes is deadly. I came back from South Africa once, and I was on, like, Virgin Upper Class.
Yeah.
And I did not want to sleep.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I got bullied into sleeping, because I was the only person in the cabin who didn't want to sleep.
Uh-huh.
When I put my light on, everybody complained to the stewardess, you know, because I was trying to read and listen to some music
like
and all
that.
It's
a bit like that time we went to the theatre.
Yeah,
you kept your phone on, and it was
well,
lighting
right
up the entire auditorium.
I had the stewardess well-versed in, you know, bringing the booze down for me at regular intervals,
yes,
and all that kind of stuff, and the others complained it was disturbing them, and I said, "This is not a sleeper aircraft.
Mm.
It's just an aircraft that happens to be travelling overnight from Johannesburg to London."
Yes.
You know. So anyway, in the end, we did a compromise, and I went and sat in the bar,
yeah,
with my own personal hostess barmaid.
Was this in the first class section?
Well, they called it upper class on Virgin,
right,
and that was the compromise. But honestly, I would say to you, aeroplane travel is, I think, so good.
Yeah.
Mind you, I always travel business class, you know.
Yeah,
but
always.
Yeah, but it's so good that there's plenty to be enjoyed by being awake.
Yeah,
I don't know why
think
people sleep on planes.
Well, because sometimes there's nothing else to do.
Well,
and if you drink too much, you might get a bit sleepy.
Well, maybe you will. But, I mean, my view is to pace yourself and don't sleep on planes.
Okay.
Okay.
Here's one from John. In light of recent events, should England even be going to the World Cup in Russia?
Well, it's a good question, that. And you always ask whether you should mix sport with politics. What I would say is that Russia have done plenty wrong over the last 2 or 3 years,
yeah,
okay? And there's plenty of times when politicians could have stepped in and said, look, we're not having this, you're going to bring in sanctions and all that.
Mm.
The minute it's centred around a spy accusation,
yeah,
all that, they look for the easiest target. And the easiest target is to say the footballers shouldn't go.
Yeah.
So I don't think footballers should pay the price for international politics, and I'm glad we're still going, and I want to go. And the other thing is, if you go,
well, England aren't going to be there for long. Let's face
we're not going to be there for long, I don't think, because, you know, we're probably, I think we're rated the 12th best team in the world,
yeah,
at the moment.
Okay.
Or 12th best in the competition,
yeah,
probably.
Like that.
Because the Netherlands
so to get into the last eight would be a bit of a struggle.
It might be a bit of a struggle to get past the round of 16. You're absolutely right. But nevertheless, my view is that it would be a meaningless gesture to say to the England football team, don't go. Meaningless gesture. Guys want to go there and play
especially
in the World Cup.
Else goes.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
If there's a mass boycott, that's different, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. I mean, you know, when we boycotted the Moscow Olympics, didn't make a heap of the difference.
No.
All it means historically is that we didn't get any medals that year, and other people who shouldn't have got them did.
Well, some people went as individuals, though, anyway.
They did.
But you can't really do that with football.
Can't do that with football because you've got to play with 10 other men.
But also, the other thing is the boycott about that particular Russian Olympics was because the Russians were in Afghanistan.
Exactly.
But guess what? A few years later, we were in Afghanistan.
Yeah, of course we were.
So it was a waste of time.
Of course we were. I mean, look, they should have dealt with the Russian situation when Litvinenko found himself turning orange. Shouldn't have to wait another, you know, 10, 12 years. So my answer to that is, don't get involved in the politics, and yes, we should still go.
Mark says this, do you plan on doing a show in Birmingham in the near future?
No, not really. Speaking on our behalf, that's you and me, we know that we're doing a Christmas show at the O2 this coming December.
Yeah.
That's already underway, and the tickets will be on sale for that, I think, in May, won't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to doing that
again. End of April, certainly,
End of April. As for any other commitments on the road, maybe something in the autumn, but Birmingham not on the radar at the moment, but we have done some very good shows there.
Although we might indeed do a few little things around the World Cup.
Yes, indeed.
There's some talk of a plan to possibly have a few kind of screening type
Absolutely
situations.
Absolutely right.
Maybe before and after the
so
football.
I think the advice to that one is watch this space.
Watch this space and many others. Mm. Yeah. Mark says, having watched Rising Damp, Gimme Gimme and Ab Fab last night, I was wondering what are Mr. Parry's favourite comedy shows from the past, apart from Fools and Horses, obviously.
No, Fools and Horses wasn't necessarily a big favourite of mine. I thought it was quite good, but I thought it veered on the ridiculous quite a lot of the time, you know. Mm. But it was a great script written by John Sullivan, and, you know, when the chandelier fell down because it was the wrong one and all that, fine. But I think they took the old, you know, street, you know, smart, you know, Del Boy and all that a bit too far.
Yeah.
The one that I liked of all time was Fawlty Towers, has to be, because they only made 12 episodes and every single one was absolutely
Although now
perfect.
When you watch it, as funny as it is, it does look quite dated, I think. Fawlty
Well, it's bound Towers. To. It's made like 40 years ago, so it's bound to.
Was it really?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, 40 years ago. So, and I've seen John Cleese in his new one, by the way, you know, The Sun Goes
People
Down
say
or something.
Rubbish,
it's rubbish. It's a drivel.
Yeah.
He can hardly speak. He's so old now. He's, you know, with age, his mouth is sort of closed up,
you know.
Yeah,
and the other problem is that you can't really be the same figure of kind of madness and craziness and threats when you're that old.
No, that's right, you can't.
Because you're just not very frightening.
No, and you look at him in the whatever role he's playing in When the Sun Sets, whatever it's called, and you're looking at John Cleese as Basil Fawlty, and so it doesn't work in your head.
No.
Excuse me, it just doesn't work, you know.
No.
It's like when... It's like when May Gray was played by the man with the rubber face. What's his name?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I know you've mentioned that in
So the
past.
Great Johnny English and...
Rowan Atkinson.
Rowan Atkinson, Blackadder, Johnny English, comedian. Mm. Then he suddenly turns to play May Gray, a very serious... pipe smoking French detective. No, because I'm waiting for him to say something funny. I'm watching May Gray,
well,
it's quite good.
You personally have typecast him.
Yeah, I have typecast him,
shouldn't.
But so is the rest of the world.
No, you shouldn't.
So to ask what is my funniest one, definitely Fawlty Towers, but I did also like, believe it or not, On the Buses with Reg Varney.
My God.
Loved it. Loved On the Buses with Reg Varney.
Well, if Fawlty Towers is 40 years old, that must be 55 years
old.
Yeah,
probably, yeah.
Here's one from Richard. If you were to own a dog, Porky, what breed would the unfortunate mutt be?
Be a Labrador.
A Labrador.
But they're so frisky and they eat so much and
they need
so much care.
A lot of exercise,
all that kind of stuff. So I think I'd probably compromise and go for a Cocker Spaniel or a King Charles Spaniel.
Right.
They're smaller. Put them in the back of the car. Get off down to the, you know, the park or the downs or something like that. Let them run around a bit. And then take them home again. Trouble with a Labrador is, and I had a girlfriend once, I had a Labrador, black Labrador, and they knock things over and they chew up your shoes and all kinds of things.
They
you
can
know.
Be quite rambunctious.
But they're very lovable and they're no threat to children, all that kind of stuff. But you've got to, when you're having a dog, it's a huge responsibility and you've got to make sure your lifestyle is sufficient. What I didn't like about the girl I'm talking about was occasionally she had to leave the dog, whose name was Hector.
Hector.
Yeah, at home all day, and I didn't like that. We came out one morning.
Why didn't you stay home and look after it?
Well, I was a big cheese man. I was running the National
News Agency. Well, even more reason why you could take the
other day off. No, no. And we came out one morning, and I said, what about Hector? She said, oh, the dog walker will be around at midday.
Yeah.
And I said, what about now and then? And Hector came up, put his paws and his nose on the window.
Yeah.
And I felt dreadful.
Yeah.
I thought, can't leave poor Hector in the house on his own.
So what did you do?
I told her to go back in, and I signed her off for the day, because she worked at the same place as me.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
And then you probably went out with somebody else for lunch, did you?
No. I didn't used to go out for lunch. Lunch is for wimps.
Yeah, and it wasn't for me when I was working there. Yeah. Kevin says this, Porky, who are you trusting to pen your eulogy or obituary? And be honest, journalist? Have you started writing it yourself so they get it just right?
No. Do you know what? It's quite a mystery. That I like obituaries, yeah. Not because people have died, but because there are some great stories. I mean, for instance, I particularly like reading the obituaries of men who fought in the Second World War who are dying now, because they must be in their 90s. Hmm. To have fought in the Second World War, you would have to have been 17 at the outbreak of war. That's 1939,
yes.
As my father was. And so you would then, that meant you would have been born in about 1922, 1921. So you would be almost 100 years old. And you read these obituaries sometimes, the Times, the Telegraph. These guys are in their 90s, they've yeah. died. But the amazing thing is, there was one obituary I was reading the other day about a guy who was in the RAF. And at 21 years of age, he was on the Dambuster raids.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
yeah, but these guys were all in their early 20s, weren't they?
It was incredible. Guy yeah. Gibson, who led the Dambuster raids, yeah. was 24 years of age.
Yeah.
And he didn't just captain the Lancaster bomber he was sitting in. Mm. He captained the whole raid. He was the squadron leader
yeah.
for the whole yeah. shebang.
Bandits at 10 o'clock.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, young people these days don't know they're born. I know that ages me, but it's absolutely true. At the age that
people get so upset these days because, you know, they've changed the shape of the Maltesers or something.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
yeah.
You go, hang on. You know, these guys used to go to war.
Yeah, that's right. These guys were flying Lancaster bombers through German anti-aircraft fire to the Ruhr Dam to drop a bouncing bomb, to turn around and come back the other way. And on some missions, the chances of coming back was 1 in 2.
Yes.
Right? That's what it was like. So I was thinking about my nephew, lovely boy, I love him to bits and all that. At 21, he went off on a gap year around the world to Australia.
Yeah.
The guy I'm talking about, who's a bitch I read the other day, was flying through German anti-aircraft flak to bomb the Ruhr Dam. Quite a difference.
It is quite a difference. Here's one from Patrick, who says, due to his extensive knowledge, has Porky ever thought of writing a quiz book? Maybe it would beat his bestseller Rooney Tunes, which is still available in all bad bookstores. For a penny.
That's quite a complicated question, Art, because why would I write a quiz book? Because I wouldn't set the questions. Other people set the questions and I answer them.
Well, unless you did. Yeah. I mean, you could set the questions. You could have a Porky quiz book with Porky quiz questions.
Well, I suppose I could, yeah. But no, my answer to that question is, writing books is a mug's game. I've written 3 or 4 books. It takes an intolerable amount of time to not just write the book, but check the facts that go into the book, okay?
Yeah.
Particularly in the days when the websites were not as extensive as they are now, and you had to go trailing around libraries, you know, for cuttings and all that kind of stuff, right? Which was what I had to do for the Alan Brazil book. I had to go to Ipswich and go to the...
And check all the facts.
Yeah, to go to the library for the local evening paper, the Ipswich Evening News, I think it is.
Is it the Ipswich Evening News?
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, and or Times or something like that. And, you know, sit in the library all day and check all the facts. The problem is, right now, Al's book, the problem there was that as Al had been pissed for the previous 30 years, it was very difficult to remember anything that had happened.
Well, indeed. So I had to check the stories against the facts, presumably.
Yeah, yeah, well, Al couldn't remember much about him, you know, because he'd been a euphoric footballer, celebrating Big Star when things went well, and celebrating maudlinly when things went badly. But it was the old Bobby Moore connotation, win or lose on the booze.
Absolutely right. Mm. David says, Porky, we are thinking of retiring soon and moving to the coast in North Devon. Is it wise to move away from your close family and be on your own? I think my wife will miss our big family. And that's from the postie in Brum.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because funny enough, I had a conversation with my family only the other day.
Yeah.
And my mother in particular, who, like your mother, is still alive, but a woman of a certain age, was horrified when I said, well, I think I might move to North London. Oh, you can't do that?
It's about as far away as you can get from her.
Yeah, exactly, because she's in Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And I said, no, Mum, you don't understand. I said, I'll see you more often. I said, because I see you now at Christmas, Easter, all that kind of stuff, you know. Excuse me, a bit of a tickle in the throat. I'll just have a glass of water. So I said, I'll see you more. I said, I'll fly down from Newcastle to Bournemouth, which is a direct route.
Yeah.
You know, every time there's a celebration.
Just about an hour, I imagine, on a plane, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Not too far.
And it takes me longer than that in the car to get from Surrey to Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And she said, no, it's not that. She said, of course, I'd like you to be in it closer. But she said, you've got to be surrounded by your family. None of us are getting any younger.
Yeah.
We should all stick together, you should be with your family. And I said, yeah, but I mean, the problem is, in London, right, it gets hot.
Mm.
And today's the first hot day I've suffered this year.
Yeah.
And I want to move somewhere where it's colder. I mean, I might even think about moving to
Newcastle, is it?
Well, I might even think about the Shetlands or something like that.
The Shetlands?
Really,
that's too far away. Because I think the problem with the Shetlands is that you'll be stuck there sometimes. You won't be able to get out because there'll be no boats. It'll be too stormy. And there might not be any planes
Wouldn't bother me.
Well, you'd be marooned on an island in the middle of the bloody North Atlantic.
Plenty of pubs on the Shetland.
There's plenty of pubs, but you know, you might have to walk to them. Because you might be able to drive your car.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about this one from
So the
David.
Answer to North Devon is, I'd think about it very seriously, because also...
Well, yes or no?
Well, I wouldn't do it, because North Devon is it's a different culture altogether to that you're used to. And when you go into a different culture, you don't always get on with your neighbours and that sort of thing.
That's
too
true.
Big a risk.
Okay. David says, being a dab hand at snooker himself, does Porky think that Ronnie O'Sullivan is the best ever? If not, who is?
Yeah, I think he is. It's a bit like when you say he's the best ever... What he hated once, I remember talking to Ronnie O'Sullivan about this. You know when they're waiting to come on and they're behind the curtain and the MC introduces them?
Do you think he's better than Stephen Hendry? Stephen Hendry was pretty good.
Well, let me qualify it.
Big fan of ours as well, Stephen Hendry.
Yeah, he's a big fan. He listens to our show. So when he's behind the curtain and he hears the MC going, no, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I want to introduce you to, you know, the man who is widely regarded as the greatest snooker player of his generation, if not the greatest snooker player of all time, Ronnie O'Sullivan. And you can see behind the curtain Ronnie O'Sullivan going... You know, pulling a face. And he hated all those eulogies because he said, until I've got more titles than Stephen Hendry, you've just mentioned, I will not be regarded as the greatest snooker player ever. And the point with...
Also, he's got quite an unusual relationship sort of with himself, hasn't he? I mean, he doesn't like being praised. He beats himself up quite a bit when he doesn't play
well. We've had him in our show.
Yeah.
He was in our building once doing some commercial stuff. And I said, we'll get him in here. So he came in.
Do you remember we played... you played pool against him.
I played pool against him.
He beat you
with one hand.
With one hand side behind his back.
He did. What that was he used a cue about 12 inches long with one hand.
Right.
And I was using a proper cue with two hands, and he still beat me.
Yes.
That was a game of pool.
Yeah.
But the great thing about him is, I mean, he's very temperamental because, as you quite rightly say, he's not totally at one with himself.
No.
But what I found the most remarkable thing was he beat some opponents by playing left-handed instead of right-handed.
Right.
And instead of people, you know, admiring and applauding this fantastic genius.
They thought he was showing off, didn't
they? No, they said that you humiliated your opponents.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, why? He said, because you're both... So that's like saying to a footballer, you're right-footed, but you scored with your left foot past that goalkeeper.
Yeah.
You've humiliated him.
Right.
What ridiculous.
Well, it is a bit ridiculous, isn't it? So, in other words, the jury's still out, is what you're saying?
What I'm saying is he's still got time to prove he is the world's greatest ever snooker player, but he has work to do.
Okay. Mm. Graham says, do you play an instrument? If not, what would you want to play if you could?
I remember my second cousin David had a guitar.
Uh-huh.
He lived in Mould in North Wales.
Right.
We used to go and see him sometimes.
It was
right,
a terrible place to live.
Argoyd Avenue was the name of the road they lived in, I remember. And no, it wasn't. They were a nice family, and they were, you know, a sort of humble family, but nice family.
Yeah, isn't it a pretty awful place, Mould?
They didn't actually live in the town centre. They lived in on the edge of Mould, and in a country setting, a big field behind the house, cherry orchards and all that kind of stuff, you know. So he had a guitar, and he wants to try, you know, to show me how to start playing it and all that. And I could tell I had no aptitude whatsoever for the guitar. No, none whatsoever. You know, do you know anything about chords and all this kind of stuff?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, I used to play the violin, which is not the same as the guitar.
Yeah.
I've tried to play the guitar hopelessly. I have no clue.
No.
I've tried to play the drums, which was a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I know about chords that you can play on a violin, but you don't play that many chords.
No,
violin,
no. Well, I know nothing about it. I never got into it. And that's probably why I have such enormous admiration for people like John Lennon and Paul McCartney and David Bowie and Oasis and, you know, anybody who's written brilliant songs, to me, has such a unique talent. And it's so rare that I'm, you know, they deserve every penny of their millions that they get and all the accolades as well. So the answer is no, I've never played a musical instrument. I've never really tried. I don't think I could.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Right, second part of the Porky Ask Porky scenario. Banner says this, with the changes to the tax system, is buy-to-let property still a smart investment?
Well, it's getting more difficult. Problem is, Mr. George Osborne...
He's trying to tax you into oblivion.
Yeah, exactly. You know, did things like took away all the tax relief interest on the mortgage and all that kind of stuff. And also, it's not just George Osborne, it's the encouragement from the authorities to try and make it difficult for people to prosper and make money. It started with Gordon Brown, of course, you know, pound taxes on all over the place.
He's supposed to be a Labour politician. George Osborne's meant to be a Tory.
Well, I don't know what George Osborne was up to. But the problem is now, you know, with the, you know, the lack of tax relief and all that kind of stuff, and the regulatory stuff is what kills you these days. Mm. So you need, you know, certificates for gas, you need certificates for electricity, you need certificates for,
well, that's all for safety,
fire alarms. Well, of course it is, but it's over-regulated. The whole thing's over-regulated. And all this costs money and time and red tape. And the best way to run an economy is to reduce red tape to a minimum. Mm. So, for instance, instead of having to call in three different people for the smoke alarms, for fire, for electricity, for gas, you should have somebody to come in and say, right, I'm doing your safety certificate, should take half an hour, and then they go.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead of which you have to use all sorts of different agencies, and it's ludicrous, the amount of... what they will also do these days is, if you're trying to rent out a flat, you will get somebody knock on the door and say, oh, hello, we've seen you're advertising a flat for rental. Mm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, I'm from a local authority. I want access to your property. I said, why? And they want to come in and measure the size of the bedrooms. And if the bedrooms aren't big enough, you can't rent that property out.
Really?
Yeah.
Now,
this is designed, of course, to stop the scandal of immigrant labour.
Oh, what, and having 15 people in a room.
Exactly. Yeah. So I agree with all of that. But the problem is, I've never been into that. Neither has anybody else I know who genuinely, you know, buys to let properties as an investment. And yet, we are covered by the same laws as these rogue landlords who are making people's lives a misery.
Yeah,
it's all wrong.
Absolutely shocking. Mm. Kevin says, Porky, which is the best county in the UK and why? He says he thinks it's Yorkshire.
Well, I'm very fond of Northumberland because it's wild and the River Coke runs through it. And when I used to live up there, a mate of mine was a rallying driver, right? And they used to do those overnight. They do them overnight. And when we did one in the summer once, in the spring or something like that.
Yeah.
You do them overnight. And it ended up with the final destination being this little pub on the edge of the River Coke. And I remember us, you know, sitting on the banks of the River Coke, drinking cider at 5 a.m. as the sun was coming up and all that kind of stuff. Absolutely beautiful. I love Northumberland. However, Northumberland is a wild and sort of isolated county, and you might say it's not everybody's cup of tea, it would be mine. But I've lived in some great counties. I've been lucky enough to live in Cheshire, I've lived in Worcestershire, I've lived in Hampshire, I've lived in Surrey, of course, you know, which is where I still live. I've lived in Suffolk, I have property there. And I've been aware of places like Lancashire. I lived in Lancashire when I worked in Manchester.
When you worked in Manchester,
So,
although Manchester's not in Lancashire anymore.
No, it's Greater Manchester,
They've made it into a different area.
Funny enough, when I lived in Sale, which is in Cheshire, in fact. You know,
The
Wirral, of course, is Cheshire.
Yes.
But, I mean, it's difficult to answer that one. There's some beautiful counties, of course, in Wales, which you all know about. You know, South Wales in particular.
There are.
And some beautiful counties in Scotland. So the answer to that is, you can't pick one particular county in this country and say it's beautiful. The other one I really love is Wiltshire.
Yes.
And I love that for its historical nature. The fact
that you've got to avoid the poisoning from the Russians.
You've got to avoid the poisoning from the Russians. But, you know, you go down a road in Wiltshire and you see historical barrows all over the place. These are burial grounds, you know, for tribes from the Iron Age and all that kind of stuff. Fantastic history.
Yes.
You see man-made hills.
Yes.
What are they called?
Barrows.
No, the barrows are the ancient graves.
Yeah.
The hills are...
Well, that's what they...
No, they're the barrows. No, they're called spits or something like that, yeah.
Hey?
Yeah, spits or something like
spits.
That. Yeah, I think they're called spits, yeah. But anyway, there's one hill there in particular, which is... excuse me. Which I think was a burial place. It's a big hill. And then we just started digging into it. But, no, Wiltshire's amongst the best, I have to say.
OK. Talking of different places, Kevin says this, Porky, I've moved to the Algarve to live and work after being headhunted. Any advice on making new pals in a new country? Currently bladder racing alone.
Well, the only thing I remember about the Algarve are there's lots of sardines there.
Yeah.
You eat them all the time.
A lot of golf courses.
A lot of rosé.
Yeah.
And that's about it, really. And a lot of sand, of course, because there's a lot of beaches in places like Albufeira and all that kind of stuff.
Faro.
Faro and all that kind of stuff. However, not my favourite place because the sunshine's there all the time.
Do you know what I don't like about the Algarve is that there's too many English people there.
That could be true, yeah.
Because when I went there last time, I was sort of on a little golfing trip.
Yes.
I wanted to speak Portuguese to somebody, not that I can.
No.
But I thought I'll learn a bit of Portuguese
so I can do a bit
of Spanish.
Yeah.
But nobody spoke Portuguese. Everywhere you went, they were all speaking English.
English, that's right, yeah. Well, a friend of mine who's a footballer had a villa there, still has a villa there, and it's in like a footballer's block.
Yeah.
So there's three footballers who all live next to each other.
Okay.
And
why do they do that?
Well, because they earn a lot of money.
Kindred spirits, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they're safe, aren't they? It's a gated compound and all that, so you know they won't get attention from tourists and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Mm. But the problem with me is, having been brought up in Northern Europe, in Chester, in England, that's the sort of temperature I like to be brought up in.
Yes.
I cannot tolerate heat, hot places, sand, dryness, humidity.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff, it just does my head in.
Yeah.
I mean, even bright sunshine, like today, which I would say is probably the first...
I don't know where you get this bright sunshine from.
Shocking.
There's no bright sunshine out there at the moment.
It hurts my eyes. It makes my skin crawl, you know, the heat on my skin and all that kind of stuff, yeah. It makes my hair stand on end.
Mm.
It makes me feel tired, apathetic, lazy, indolent, and it's not for me.
Okay.
So I couldn't... some of our colleagues, as you know, have gone out to work in Qatar.
They have.
Jesus.
I know.
I mean, the temperature out there is sort of 40 degrees sometimes. I would die.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd die in New York in the summer.
You would.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. Maynard says this, like Ken Dodd, have you stashed all your money in a shoebox under the bed?
No, but I do believe in having a sizable amount of cash at hand, available around the house.
Just in case.
Just in case.
Mm.
Because, for instance, if somebody comes and does a job, which they thought was like a £100 job, but it turned out to be a £700 job, well, people don't take checks these days. I don't want to put that much on a credit card.
Yeah.
So I'm often paying cash, you know.
Okay.
And also, I like sometimes to look at my cash and feel...
to look at it?
Yeah, I like to look at it.
What do you mean, generally just to sort of like get the feel of it?
Well, I keep it in plastic sandwich boxes.
Do you?
Yeah.
How many have you got?
About four.
Four plastic sandwich boxes full of money?
Yes, I have, yeah.
How much money have you got in there?
A few thousand.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, are you sure you're not worried about getting robbed?
No. No, they wouldn't be able to find you, honestly.
Really?
Nobody can break into my place.
Well,
because
that's why you've got the big drug dealer's gate on.
Well, not drug dealer's gate. It's because I used to go away to a lot of tournaments for 4 or 5 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And so it's just a safety precaution. But sometimes, if I had it there for quite a long time, I then just go out and spend it. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think there's too much cash mounting up in the house, so I'll go and buy something for £1,000 or something like that.
And use cash.
And use cash.
That's
a
bizarre way to operate, I must say.
Yeah.
Well, I hope it doesn't go missing. One from Brad here, who says, does Porky also use offshore tax havens to escape the authorities and pay less tax like so many other great winners in life?
No, I don't. Don't use tax havens. Don't bank offshore. Don't in any way try to avoid tax. Mm. I certainly don't evade tax. And in fact, at the moment, I'm just squaring up, you know, a few bills like VAT and all that kind of stuff. It's very painful. But my position is, I have a great accountant. I never withhold one single item or document or fact from him. In fact, he gets all my bank accounts.
So he sees where it all is.
He sees exactly what comes in and goes out. The minute I get a bank account statement, he gets one as well. So there's no way in the world I can possibly fool him. I wouldn't want to fool him anyway.
Well, there's no point fooling your own accountant.
No, of course there's not.
Because he needs to know everything you do.
Exactly. I show him everything and I pay up. And you know what? That enables me to sleep easy in my bed at night. I know people who do try and, you know, pull the wool over the taxman's eyes. Mm. And in fact, I did once, because if you remember, I came back to America once. I got caught out and I got a tax bill for about 38 grand. seriously.
I know.
And I wasn't trying to really avoid tax or evade tax. I simply was working here and I was working in America. And I wasn't paying enough tax in either, and then it caught up with me.
Well, it's very difficult as well when you're used to a life of having your tax taken away.
Exactly.
As PAYE.
Exactly.
And then for the first time you become self-employed, say, for example, and you get all this money, and you don't always have the sense to put some to the side every month to go, right, that'll be the tax that I'll pay that at the end of the year.
Yes.
So you have to get into that discipline, which we all do
absolutely
now. But at the beginning, I think we probably didn't.
And we've got to have some sympathy for our colleagues at the BBC.
Yeah.
They've got terrible problems. Mm. Because the BBC people who, you know, do the payroll...
It was the BBC that pretty much told them this is what we should be
doing. They do the payroll. Yeah. They said to them, look, we'd like you to become, you know, your own private company and charge us invoices on a freelance basis.
Right. Which is all fine and dandy as long as you work for other people.
Yeah.
But if you only work for one lot of people, like the BBC, then you're screwed.
And the tax man now is saying, but you're not a, what do they call them, sole trader. You are, in fact, a paid employee of the BBC. That's where you get your money from.
Because that's all you do.
And now the BBC are in a very difficult position in which they may have to stump up to pay some tax bills.
They may.
Because there are allegations that they said to these people, well, if you don't go on your own and work as a one-man company, you can't work for the BBC anymore. Because it saved the BBC enormous amounts of money in national insurance.
Yeah, it did. Absolutely right. Jed says this, Mike, could you please ask Porky if he would like to see a team from the University of the Trent enter into an extended rowing tournament on the Thames? Or maybe they'd be barred for being upstarts called Nottingham Polytechnic. Now, this stems from a question that arose over the course of the boat race weekend.
Oh, yes.
Where you said, I think, that you'd like to see it expanded to more than two teams.
Yeah, definitely.
Would you like to see it expanded to a team from the University of the Trent?
No.
Why not?
I would like to see it expanded. By the way, in the Midlands, somewhere near the University of Trent, there is the National Rowing Centre, isn't there?
Is there?
Yeah, it is. The National Rowing Centre, somewhere in the East Midlands.
I thought that was somewhere in near Thames or
something. No, it's not. No. You're thinking of Henley and the Leander Club and all that. That's still the River Thames. No, the National Rowing Centre, and I can't remember the name of it now, is definitely in the East Midlands somewhere.
Is it?
Okay, yeah. It's man-made, like, you know, long lanes. Which
is that the one they used for the Olympics, you mean?
Could have been, yeah. Could have
I
been.
Think that was out near Ascot somewhere, wasn't it?
No.
Are
this
you
is,
sure?
No, this is in the East Midlands. Anyway, to answer your question, why should Oxford and Cambridge be the only two who row in the boat race every year? Because,
because that's
Oxford,
the tradition.
Yeah, but I mean, it's become an anachronism.
An anachronism.
And what I would say is, I would say expand it at least to four. I would say Oxford and Cambridge, fine, because of tradition.
Yeah.
And then a university from London, like University College London, and Durham, to represent the north of England.
Uh-huh.
And they should have semi-finals, which should take place on non-Thames rivers.
Yes.
So they could take place, for instance, on the what's Durham Town on I'm going to leave old Durham Town.
What you mean on the actual? What's the actual?
The Weir, Weir side
is the Weir side in Durham.
It's the Weir, yeah, the Weir.
Okay,
and you could have the other semi-final on something like the Taff.
Well, so you would have it going on for more than one weekend, in other words.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You'd have two semi-finals,
like,
and then you'd have the final.
No.
So you could have a final between University College London and Durham, and that would be the boat race final.
All right.
Yeah.
Looks like the final question here is from a good deep, who says, "Hi, Mr. Porky, why is half the world trying to lose weight while the other half is starving?"
Well, that's a very good question.
Yeah.
In fact, funnily enough, you and I touched the other day on the fact that the extended life expectancy of man is now going into reverse because of the obesity issues, the diabetes issues and all that kind of stuff. The reason why there are people on this planet starving and other people are getting bigger and fatter and more obese is simply because we do not have an efficient world economy. If we had an efficient world economy, we would be able to divert resources to those who need them most. But unfortunately, they are in parts of the world which are largely inaccessible because the countries we're talking about are developing countries. Mm. And a well-developed economy, unless it's run badly, should be able to provide its people with its food. Now, Venezuela is a very good example of an economy that used to be very well run. And it was plentiful in supplies of food. It's South America, so meat is on hand throughout Latin America, South America. Fruit is on hand, vegetation is on hand. But then when you get a ridiculous government who decide that, they're going to go into Marxist policies to
They kicked out all the American oil companies where they were making loads of money from them in taxes.
Exactly.
And said, right, we're going to renationalise everything.
Exactly, which is what they did. And
Jeremy Corbyn's favourite country, isn't it?
Jeremy Corbyn says it's one of his favourite countries, and the reason why it imploded and collapsed in the end, and loads of people started dying of hunger and all this kind of stuff, right, was, according to Mr. Corbyn, because there wasn't enough socialism in Venezuela. Not that there was too much. By comparison, the Middle East countries in the 60s did exactly the same as Venezuela and kicked out all the American oil companies, but they then efficiently ran the oil companies themselves, employing American people, and raised billions in taxes, which then went into things like hospitals and welfare plans. So that was a way to get it right.
And as a result, all the people that live in those countries, although supposedly it's changing now, all the people live in those countries get free education.
That's right.
They get free medicine.
Free healthcare.
They drive around in cars which they dump whenever they break down because they don't need to repair them.
Sometimes when a car runs out of petrol in one of those Middle East countries, the legendary tale is they leave them at the roadside and thumb a lift home and then just go and get another car.
I found one final question I haven't asked you. When was the last time, it says Flinty, when you were clean-shaven?
Oh, Well, I tell you when it was.
You did it for a bet, I think, didn't you?
No, I think that... yes, I probably did.
Or for charity or something.
For charity or something. I'll tell you what I did one time. Now, I've had a beard since I was 18 because I cheated on my girlfriend. And when she said, why didn't you have a shave this morning before you went to work? Because I was a reporter on the Chester Chronicle. I said, oh, I'm growing a beard. Because obviously I hadn't been home and therefore I had no access to a razor. Yes.
So from one lie, your entire life has been you as a bearded man.
Yes, that's right.
Isn't that extraordinary? Isn't that not such a great apocryphal story?
It's an apocryphal story.
About you.
Yeah. I said that to her in the lunch break. You know, I met her in the pub, forgot that I hadn't shaved. Mm. And she said, oh, and as she rubbed her hand on my face, of course, it was like sandpaper.
Yeah.
And I said, I thought I'd grow a beard. Mm. I thought I'd, you know, surprise you.
So she bought that, did she?
Yeah, and then, of course, I had to start growing a beard, didn't I? However, it would be
about... That's an awfully long time ago. I mean, you could have changed your view between now and then.
Well, I look quite good, actually, because in those days, my hair was auburn.
Yeah.
And I had a really thick, sort of stocky beard. I looked a bit like Chuck Norris does, you know, at his best. You know what I mean?
Did you?
No, okay. Absolutely. Or Noel Edmonds. I told you about...
Missing in action.
Yeah, I told you about the resemblance between me and Noel Edmonds.
I don't think you want to look like Noel Edmonds.
Yeah, I did look like Noel Edmonds, and people used to applaud that. Mm. But the... about... What would it be? It must be 20 years ago now. Mm. I went to St. Lucia, okay? And I'd read that Ringo Starr had actually shaved his beard off for the first time in about 10 years.
Right.
And he said people should do it because when you do, you know, your skin's very sensitive underneath.
I bet it is, yeah.
Excuse me. And it should be exposed
to
sunlight.
You wouldn't want to go out into the sun with that, would you? Because
well,
you'd get really, really...
Now, this is the problem.
Yeah.
So I went to St. Lucia and I thought, I know what I'll do. On day one, I'll shave my beard off.
Mm.
Because then, at least, it'll get some sunshine, get suntan, and it won't look all horribly white compared to the rest of my face.
Yeah.
So I did, but it was as you say, a complete disaster because the sun.
You must have got burnt to a crisp.
I got burnt to a crisp.
Yeah, I did the exact opposite because when I went to St. Lucia, I actually went on a boating holiday, sailing holiday, and because I didn't bother shaving, when I came off, and it might surprise you to know, because my mother's hair is auburn, my beard was kind of auburn covered, and I was very brown because when you're on the water, you get even more you know sun on you. And of course, by the time I got back to New York, where I was living at the time, and I started to shave this beard off that I had, it was white as a sheet. I looked ridiculous, because all the bottom half of my face was pale.
Yeah, it was like panda face.
And well, it was worse than that. I don't know what it was like, was sort of black and white cat. Or
something. That's right. Yeah, but it was very difficult because. When you've got such a thick beard, I had a very thick beard in those days, it's very difficult to get it off anyway.
Yeah.
You have to use scissors first to cut it right down.
I can't imagine, because I mean, this thing, which was about a 10-day growth, and I'm not particularly hirsute, was really horrible to shave.
Yeah, that's right,
painful.
And then you can only shave quarter of an inch down.
Have
you
ever used an electric shaver?
I used to before I grew a beard, but I mean, I thought it was useless.
I've never used
In those days, you're talking about 30, 40 years ago.
Philly shave.
But it was just two little rings that went round.
Anyway, that's the end of
Okay. Well, I hope I've helped you. I hope I've changed your lives.
Hopefully.
That's what I'm here to do. And, and if you feel that, you know, a sudden bolt of light has shot through your body and your head, and I've been responsible, then all I can say is, that's what I'm here for.
That's what he's here for, to help. That was Ask Porky.
I like sometimes to look at my cash and feel...
Well, to look at it?
Yeah, I like to look at it,
What do you mean, generally, just to sort of, like, get the feel of it?
Well, I keep it in plastic sandwich boxes.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, how many have you got?
About four.
Four plastic sandwich boxes full of money?
Yes, I have,
How much money have you got in there?
A few thousand.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you sure you're not worried about getting robbed?
No, no. They wouldn't be able to find it, honestly.
Really?
I know, nobody can break into my place.
Well, that's why you've got the big drug dealer's gate.
Well, not drug dealer's gates. It's because I used to go away to a lot of tournaments for 4 or 5 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And so it's just a safety precaution. But sometimes, if I had it there for quite a long time, I then just go out and spend it. See what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think there's too much cash mounting up in the house. So I'll go and buy something for £1,000 or something like that.
And use cash.
And use cash.
That's a bizarre way to operate, I must say. Well, I hope it doesn't go missing.
I cannot tolerate heat, hot places, sand, dryness, humidity, and all that kind of stuff. It just does my head in.
Yeah.
I mean, even bright sunshine like today, which I would say is probably the first...
I don't know where you get this bright sunshine from.
Shocking.
There's no bright sunshine out there at the moment.
It hurts my eyes. It makes my
eyes.
It makes my skin crawl, you know, the heat on my skin and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It makes my hair stand on end. It makes me feel tired, apathetic, lazy, indolent, and it's not for me.
Okay.
So I couldn't put, I mean, some of our colleagues, as you know, have gone out to work in Qatar.
Yeah, I have.
Jesus.
I know.
I mean, the temperature out there is sort of 40 degrees sometimes. I would die.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd die in New York in the summer.
You would. Yeah. Absolutely right.
I know people who do try and, you know, pull the wool over the taxman's eyes. Mm. And in fact, I did once, because if you remember,
you
came back to
there,
America once, I got caught out and I got a tax bill for about 38 grand. seriously.
I know.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Expecting heavy downpours all day today.
You're a builder. You build. It's literally in your job title.
Woo, let's hit it.
A little rain isn't stopping you. Not today, not any day. Shouldn't your flashing tape be working through it all too? Only Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape's high-performance acrylic adhesive sticks, re-sticks, and stays stuck, even on the roughest surfaces in rain, snow, heat, and more. So you stay in control when it matters most. Show weather who's boss with Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape.